Well, good morning, everyone. So, did Micah just say hi? So, this week we're going to be looking at Colossians 3:19 specifically. We looked at Colossians 3:18 last week, and we started with wives just because in Colossians that's where the scripture starts. Even I've had some conversations about, you know, why does it start with wives? You know, it seems like husbands are the leaders, and so you would think it starts with them. Just things to think about. But in Colossians 3:18 and 19, the instructions for both roles are very simple. So chapter 18, wives are really told one thing, be subject or submit to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. And husbands are told one do and one do not. So really, in a sense, in terms of like application, husbands are also told one thing here. And the reason we're looking at these scriptures is because I think the scriptures in Colossians tend to get overlooked in maybe some of the more detailed instructions in Ephesians 5, where women are told to love their husbands with a bit more information given about why. And husbands in Ephesians 5 are told to love their husbands as Christ loved the church, and a lot more detail is given there. 1 Peter 3 similarly gives more detail to these instructions. And so I wanted to focus on these instructions, for one, because I think Colossians tends to be a little overlooked. And then two, these instructions are very simple, and I do want to try to keep it as simple as it is. So the goal of this lesson isn't to use these scriptures as a platform to talk about everything else that is said everywhere else about these roles, but to try to stay honed in on Colossians. And also to equip us just to simply love our wives and for wives to simply love their husbands. And so again, that's going to be the goal this morning, is to try to stay in Colossians and to try to keep it as simple as what the text says. Colossians also has a unique emphasis here in verse 19. So husbands are told to love their wives, and a lot of translations like the ESV will say, do not be harsh with them, right? And this is actually the only place where, when husbands are being addressed, this is actually the only place that gives that qualification. So we're going to spend some time kind of focusing on why that's important and how to think about that. So, and I want to start this lesson really reiterating things from last week. So last week, when we talked about the role of wives, this is where we started there as well. That really the cross is the unifying anthem for every one of us, right? Whether we're not married, whether we are married, whether someone is an elder of a church and they're having to think about how to fulfill that role, or a deacon. The point is, any role anyone has in God's kingdom, the cross is what unifies us all together. And the idea is, if instruction related to these roles does not push us closer to the cross, then something's wrong with our approach to it, right? So whether we're talking about wives learning how to be submissive to their husbands, really that's going to center on the cross. And the cross is what makes those difficult instructions more approachable, and much more even understandable in a lot of ways. And it's the same for a husband. And how I want to relate this to husbands here, first of all, is what the cross represents in God's relationship to us, right? The cross is God taking ownership of his relationship with us. And I think for husbands, the way that we can learn from that is we need to take ownership of our relationships with our wives. We need to take ownership of our role, right? If we have a leadership role, then if we're going to learn from the cross, God takes ownership of that leadership role at great cost, right? Even when it's difficult, even when it costs him everything that he could possibly sacrifice, the cross is God taking full responsibility, taking full ownership of his relationship with us. But how he took responsibility is also really important. Jesus took responsibility for our sins. You know, we talked about it this morning in the Revelation class, that Jesus suffered violently for something that should have happened to us, right? Like, we deserve the penalty for our sin. that is rightfully due to us for our own guilt. And yet Jesus took that upon himself so that we could be released from that and be spared from that. And so how does this relate to husbands, all of this that I'm trying to say here? I think a husband, a leader, a good leader in general, takes responsibility for the issues in their environment, right? And so for husbands, what that means is the speck of any problem, the speck is in my wife's eye. The log is in mine. You know, I think we have to be careful as husbands to realize that if there's a problem in our household, if there's a problem in our marriage, that starts with me first, right? And the Christ-like thing, the cross-centered thing, is that I take ownership of problems in my household, meaning I don't blame my wife. I don't see a problem and say, well, I wish my wife would, or if only she did. No, I think when we see the plank in our own eye, we realize that so many problems that maybe at first may seem like, well, that's them doing this, and if they would just stop or do this differently, that really maybe if I changed my approach, maybe that would actually change things more than I realize. And it can take a lot of humility. Sometimes it can take time to learn how to see things that way. But we need to take ownership for our marriage and our role in marriage. And I think what this implies as well is we need to take full ownership of the problems in our marriage, right? And the cross was not just an act. So obviously Jesus died and that happened and then he rose from the dead. And in some ways it's like it's over. But the cross really is a symbol of God's covenant, right? It's how much he's willing to give for the relationship. It's what he's willing to sacrifice for the relationship. And the idea is God is willing to sacrifice anything to make the relationship work. Like any obstacle that could get in the way of the relationship, God, if he can sacrifice it and set it aside at whatever expense, at whatever cost, no matter how much has to be suffered, God takes the first step and shows, I am willing to suffer anything and everything to make this relationship work. How this relates to husbands. I think there's a simple principle that has helped me a lot, is that God is willing to set all lesser things aside. And so a part of a husband loving his wife means a husband has to learn how to set lesser things aside. Like even like silly things like, you know, entertainment isn't wrong, but sometimes I want to be entertained or I want to relax or I want time to be easy and comfortable. And something as simple as, you know, I may want comfortable time for me, but for the sake of my wife and loving my wife, I might have to set that aside. And have less me time or less comfort time, less relaxed time, or at least what I may like think is relaxed time, right? I may just want to watch something and zone out, and maybe I've got to set that aside for the sake of my wife. And again, when you compare that to the cross, that's nothing, right? So part of being a husband and loving our wives and taking ownership of the relationship is we've got to come to terms with the fact that we have to learn how to continuously set the lesser things aside so that we can focus on the needs of our wife and how to properly love and take care of our wives, right? And kind of on that subject, you know, the love of the cross is not convenient, it's not comfortable, and it's not emotionally compelling, right? Loving my wife, obviously, if we're thinking about it in terms of what we see with God, what we see with Jesus, we're not talking about a love that is fun, that's going to be convenient or comfortable for me. I mean, think about Gethsemane. How important in our relationship with God, how important was Jesus' death? You know, we just really before this lesson remembered Jesus' death in the Lord's Supper that is meant to continuously remind us about how important that was, right? So we owe everything to the fact that God sent Jesus specifically to die for us so that our relationship with God could not only exist but work, but on our end, so that we could have complete confidence in God's consistency, his faithfulness, his love for us. And again, that he sets everything aside for us. And Gethsemane shows us that Jesus struggled with that, right? That Jesus had to wrestle with his will desperately and painfully. And that's what we're talking about with loving our wives, is there may be times where loving my wife is not going to feel natural. It's not going to be emotionally compelling. It's not going to be the convenient decision to make, but that's what it means to love, right? So we need to elevate our standard of what it means to love, because marriage isn't just about having a fun time. It's not just because we just naturally are getting along and having easy bonding time and easy time together. It's especially when it's most difficult that we need to love. And that's what we see with the cross. And then look at chapter 3, verse 10 and 11. And the reason we kind of worked towards verse 19 in the scripture reading is because all of this really is very relevant to what goes into love your wives and don't be embittered against them. But just kind of on this introductory topic of, you know, starting with the cross first, verse 10 and 11, we mentioned this with wives last week, that how we fulfill our roles is a part of becoming new, right? So verse 10, and having put on the new self who is being renewed to a true knowledge according to the image of the one who created him, a renewal in which there is no distinction between Greek and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, and freeman, but Christ is all in all. So number one, I want to reiterate what I said last week, that, you know, there might be working marriages in the world. There may be some like advice that we can get from maybe like books that get written. But really, this is about how this is centered on Jesus, right? That Jesus really is the one who really shows us how to properly love our wives and what we need to do to understand that and what that practically looks like. But really what I have on the board here is the best thing I can do for my wife then. If Jesus defines love, if this is about becoming like Jesus, the best thing I can do for my wife is have the best possible commitment to Jesus. Because the more clearly then, look at verse 10, I'm being renewed according to a true knowledge, according to the one who created him, right? So if I have a broken or shallow view of Jesus based on this, is that going to affect my capacity or ability to love my wife? Absolutely. So the idea is the clearer I can see Jesus, the better I understand Jesus, the more I love Jesus, the more equipped I am to love my wife. The less I love Jesus, the more I hold myself back in my commitment to Jesus, that's going to hurt my wife. And that is going to directly affect my commitment to my wife and how I understand practically on a daily basis ways in which I'm going to fulfill my role in that relationship. So again, my view of Jesus is actually what determines how I love my wife. The more clearly I see Jesus, the better I can love my wife. The more shallow my view of Jesus is, the more broken and unclear my view of Jesus is, the more broken my approach will be to loving my wife. All right, so the rest of this lesson, I really just want to focus on the simplicity of husbands, love your wives, and do not be embittered against them or don't be harsh with them. So really, we're going to be focusing on love without bitterness. And love is a loaded term. So, you know, when I was preparing for both of these lessons, you know, the one on wives and husbands, my assumption initially was the lesson on husbands is going to be easier because, you know, talking about women, well, you know, that's, you know, I'm a man. And so I'm more approaching this from the husband standpoint. So it's going to be more difficult to kind of understand how to see things from that perspective. But I found it very difficult to know how to kind of hone in on what do you talk about with love? You know, God is love. Where do you go to be specific about, well, you know, think about maybe this aspect of love. So I found it very overwhelming and very challenging to try to think about, you know, what specifically to practically talk about when we're talking about love. But I hope this summary is helpful because I think this generally does summarize what a husband is being called to here. So I think love biblically is to suffer and sacrifice for someone. Again, not just when it's emotionally convenient, not when it feels good to do it. And to suffer isn't just like bodily suffering. I think anytime there's a need for self-denial to do something difficult, there's a sense where that is suffering. And then sacrificing like God, being willing to set aside all lesser things for the sake of the relationship, for our well-being, setting aside his wrath, the exercising of his anger. So to love is to suffer and sacrifice for someone on the basis of the highest possible principles. So as an example, I have Luke 6:35 here. So when Jesus was teaching his first sermon in Luke, he said, love your enemies, do good and lend, expecting Some translations say, hoping for nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you'll be sons of the Most High, for he himself is kind to ungrateful and evil people. So when I'm talking about highest possible principles, what I mean is a principle is something that fundamentally determines everything you do and think, right? Like when you think about someone who is operating on high principles, or that person has high standards for themselves, you know, it's the idea of they have something that they have, you know, determined to do or to be that determines everything else they do, right? So here's the point with this, is at the end of the verse, it says we are to love people ultimately as God does, right? So God is the standard. Jesus is the standard. And if you look at the beginning of the verse, we're to love our enemies in this way. And I think, unfortunately, what can happen so easily is love and the practical nature of love as God teaches it ends up being for people out there somewhere. And we end up looking or overlooking the relationships that are most relevant, our closest relationships. So the point is this, if we're to love our enemies this way, how much more my wife? If I'm to do good to my enemy, someone who is actively seeking my harm, then how much more should I seek to do good to my wife and be generous toward my wife and expect nothing in return? So if this is the standard, the principle for my wife or for my enemies, then that principle should fundamentally carry into the standards I have for how I'm to treat my wife, right? And so I wanted to think about it this way again with Jesus. You know, what was Jesus's standard in terms of how he interacted with people? You know, how he loved people. And again, Gethsemane shows us the standard of Jesus' life wasn't just what felt right, what was convenient. I've sometimes thought that with, again, it's just opinion. But when Jesus suffered the cross, he didn't sleep the night before, so he was tired. You know, when he was going into Gethsemane, he told his disciples that he was grieved to the point of death. So I imagine Jesus could have felt very sick, could have felt very tired, and yet his standard for everything was the will of God. And that was the principle that determined everything he did and everything he thought, everything he felt in response to everything he endured when he was going through the cross, right? So to love, I think, is simply in principle to suffer and sacrifice for my wife on the basis of the highest possible principles. And what this means in Colossians 3:19 is I am to prioritize grace and affection toward my wife. So I think it's interesting. You know, wives are never told to love their husbands. You know, I think that's implied with submit to them, and it's kind of inherently implied in the relationship. It's certainly implied generally we're to love one another, right? We're to love our enemies. So of course, wives should love their husbands. But you know, over and over again, husbands are particularly told, love your wives. So I think what that means is Satan is going to try to destroy that in men and in husbands. Satan's mission is for me and for you, husbands, to lessen our love for our wives, to become embittered, to become distant, to become present but emotionally distant. And so we have to recognize when God gives us an instruction, it's because Satan is going to try to war against that thing. Satan is going to try to pull us away from that thing. And so we've got to be careful to prioritize this and give in abundance, right? Look at Colossians 3, verse 12. I think what this means is what God is saying is, I owe my wife. My wife has a right to my love, to the highest degree, the highest capacity of my love. Colossians 3, verse 12. These are things then that I need to make sure that before anyone else, this is owed to my wife. Verse 12. So as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion. From God's perspective, I owe my wife more than anyone else a heart of compassion. I owe my wife kindness, humility, gentleness, patience. I need to bear with her. I need to forgive her. If there's some complaint, this is like what we talked about at the beginning of the lesson. I take ownership. Just as the Lord forgave me, be forgiving. And then verse 14, I think, emphasizes again, beyond all these things, as in There's so much that could be said, but the principle is this. If we put on love, it is the perfect bond of unity. Marriage is able to be held together, and that bond is able to be strengthened because the standard of Christ's love is going to lead a person to continuously do what is in the true best interest of that other person and set myself aside whenever it's needed. But if I don't have the love of God, well, then everything is going to get so complicated and Satan is going to be able to cause disunity. So husbands, then, if they're to love their wives in this way, this again implies that husbands should be affectionate. It's not just that husbands are present. It's not just that husbands bodily are there. It's not just that they provide income, housing, protection physically. It's that they especially consistently, lavishly love their wives. And I think, again, this would be being affectionate and loving toward their wives, more generous towards them than anybody else. And God's command implies, again, that wives have a right to this from their husbands. Lastly, I know this is really difficult for parents. I get that. Don't let your kids get in the way of your love for your wife. I think when it says husband, love your wives, it means your wife comes first. Kids are important. I know I'm not a parent. But your wife has a right to your love even when your kids are tiring and taxing and time consuming, right? Do not let your children get in the way of your love for your wife. That requires work and balance. I understand that, right? But your wife comes first. You can still raise your kids, love your kids, but never let your kids come in the way of your love for your wife. And this is where Colossians gives special emphasis. You know, I think it's even natural. I don't think it requires godliness to know that a husband should be a protector, right? He should provide protection for his wife. But I think Colossians shows us that the first and, I would argue, the most important protection a husband can provide for his wife is protecting the mind and protecting the heart first. A husband needs to prioritize protecting his attitude toward his wife and protecting his feelings toward his wife. And I would argue again that if a husband can protect his heart and protect his mind, then any other protection that needs to happen is not only secondary, but will naturally fit. You know, things will just work. But if a husband is not protecting his heart, if a husband is not protecting his mind, then there's a lot of other things that aren't going to work. There's going to be a lot of other things that get overlooked, and there's a lot of other dangers that are going to come into the relationship, and there's not even going to be a proper understanding of why those kind of dangers are coming into play. So again, I want you to go back to verse 5-9. And I think there needs to be special emphasis, again, that these things we're told to put away, generally, everyone is told to put these things away. A husband must be especially careful that these things are being put away out of the marriage relationship. So look at verse 5. Therefore, consider the members of your earthly body as dead to immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which amounts to idolatry. You know, there's no sin that exists in isolation. If there is active sin in my life, it's going to be hard for me to emotionally find refuge and renewal in the Lord when there's tension in my marriage. And it's going to be a lot easier to blow up and become really upset. That's not to say that if I struggle with patience in my marriage, that means there's some like secret hidden sin I'm not checking. But what I'm saying is in verse 5, that if a husband is not being very diligent to put these things away, these things are going to directly impact my capacity to love my wife, right? Then you look at verse 8, put them all aside, anger, wrath, malice, slander, abusive speech from your mouth. Obviously, when he says, don't be embittered against your wife, that obviously it ties into these qualities especially. But again, for God to say, don't be embittered towards your wife, means that these things are going to be especially tempting to give into in marriage. The more you interact with a person, the more opportunity there is to mess up. You know, a hard thing is in Proverbs, it says, where there are many words, sin is not lacking. You know, I need to talk to my wife. And my wife and I are going to talk a lot. And what that means is there's a lot of opportunities to say things wrong. There's a lot of opportunities to put my foot in my mouth. And I'm sure as husbands, we can all relate to that. There's a lot of opportunity for anger. There's a lot of opportunity for wrath, malice. There's a lot of opportunity to say things that I shouldn't say, to say abusive things. And something that I've been very convicted by is when Eva and I are having tension, there are things in tension, in our tension, that I will say about myself that I would never say about her. There are abusive things that I'll think about myself and say about myself, because in tension, sometimes there can be a lot of insecurity, right? And Satan is really good at manipulating insecurity and turning it in subtle ways very inward and very self-focused. So what I'm saying is abusive speech isn't just against your partner. I think abusive speech is also things you say about yourself as well. And that can make problems a lot worse and elevate tension immediately and skyrocket the problem. Even if I'm not saying abusive things about the other person, even if it's something about myself. So again, there's a lot of work that needs to be done to watch my feelings. And when does that matter the most? It matters when I'm feeling those things, right? So of course, it's helpful to kind of get this in my mind when I'm not suffering some tension with my wife. But I mean, it's more helpful though, that when I am actively in the moment of tension, that I can call these things to mind. And remember, what I need to do right now is be really careful to protect my heart and protect my mind. Not that I'm going to do that perfectly, but it can certainly elevate the principle, again, the principle of how I'm handling things with my wife. So a few practical things, I think, just like we talked about last week. So last week, as awkward as it was, we talked about how important the sexual relationship is between a man and his wife and how that relates to 1 Corinthians 7. And so we talked about particular struggles. It seems like wives can face there. But it would be naive that we not talk about the particular struggle men face in this, right? So I think men struggle more with sexual temptations, lustful thoughts, and pornography addiction. And this relates to that. So 1 Corinthians 7 again says, the husband must fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise also the husband does not have authority over her own body, but the wife does. Stop depriving one another. You know, by giving into lustful thoughts, feeding lustful thoughts, I am depriving my wife of something that only belongs to her. Because sexual temptation isn't just something that exists away from my wife or separated from my relationship from my wife. You know, Satan wants to diminish my affections toward my wife, my attraction toward my wife. Satan wants to cause rifts, hurts, divisions. And of course, in the way Satan manipulates and deceives, he wants to do that in ways that seem inconsequential, hidden, disassociated from any kind of direct emotional impact. But what God makes very clear is obviously the physical sexual relationship should only exist between a man and his wife. But I would argue this, that my attraction belongs only to my wife. And the world underplays the consequence and seriousness of sexual immorality, right? And the members here have heard me say this many times. I'm saying this as someone where when I was younger, I was addicted to pornography. So I get the struggle. I face the battle. But we don't face that battle by denying the extent of the problem, right? We're not equipped to deal with the problem by pretending it's less than it is. And we don't compromise the need to seriously, emotionally overcome those things just because it's difficult, right? We need to be really, really serious-minded about this. And remember, Jesus said, if we look at a woman with lustful intent, we've committed adultery against our wives within our own hearts, right? My wife, what belongs to her, she has a right to all of my sexual attraction. And Satan wants to disrupt that. Satan wants to destroy that. But I need to learn to see sexual temptation as an attack on my wife. And I need to see even more clearly than that, that Satan is trying to hurt my relationship with my wife when he is trying to throw these fiery darts at us and cause us to give in to sexual thoughts and lusts and temptations. Okay. And I think we need to think of things that trigger bitter feelings and harsh behavior. I think there's a lot of things that can take us off guard. And I don't mean this in a way that is funny, but women think very differently than men. Women feel things very differently than men. And I would argue that that is such a blessing, because marriage trains us to think outside of ourselves. And I debated saying this. This is just an opinion. This is a personal conviction, okay? So I'm not saying this as like Bible truth. But I think we need to be really careful as men that we honor and give the highest respect to the fact that women think differently than men. What I'm trying to say is there's a lot of worldly comedy that makes light of that. And some of that I think can be innocent and funny. But I don't know. I think there's things that sometimes the world pokes fun at that I think when you realize how serious that is and how beautiful that is, it's just not funny anymore, right? I think we need to really respect. My wife thinks differently than me, and that is a blessing to me. And I want to understand that. I want to treat that as something precious. Because in 1 Peter 3, it says that a husband owes his wife understanding and honor, right? That means I recognize that when she feels differently than I do, God gives me the responsibility of understanding it and not being harsh with her about it, right? Okay. So what can trigger harsh feelings and behaviors? And again, I'm saying this as someone where I have become harsh with Eva so many times in my relationship with her, and she has had to forgive me more times than I can even remember for when I have let my temper out, where I have had angry outbursts, and if I have needed to repent and let myself be convicted and ask her for her forgiveness. So I'm not saying this as someone who has this figured out, right? But I think we need to be very thoughtful about things that I think commonly trigger harsh behavior and bitter emotions. And I think with women thinking differently than men, feeling differently than men, oftentimes I think it's when her needs interrupt my wants. It's when her emotions are deep, when she's feeling tension that is very jarring, when it's very extreme, and I don't understand why, I don't understand what caused it, or it's not solved easily, you know, because oftentimes emotional tension, it's not like you figure out the problem and you say the perfect thing and, oh, you've solved it, it's over now, we can move on. That's just not realistic, and that's not how people operate. And some women maybe are very different than others, but I think generally sometimes tension lingers and requires just a lot of patience. So, some practical things. What about when a husband, if you are a husband, think about this personally, you've had a really tense day at work, you've had an exhausting day at work, and you come home and you really just want to relax. But you come home and your wife is exasperated. She's frustrated. And sometimes what can happen is emotionally, there are times when a wife may be upset with her husband and he doesn't understand why. Maybe there's not necessarily a reason. Maybe if you have kids, your kids are misbehaving too. So you come home, you're tired. You really just want to relax. Your wife is upset, your kids are misbehaving, and you've entered into a chaotic environment, a very tense environment. What do you do? And this is why it's so important, again, to find joy in service, sacrifice, to learn how to find emotional refuge in the Lord, not just in me time, because my pursuit of comfort oftentimes is what causes further conflict with my wife, when she needs my help and not just me to check out and relax. What about when it's late, you're laying down for bed, and maybe you've both been so busy through the day with different things, maybe with giving attention to the kids, you know, just you haven't really been able to sit down, slow down and talk. So you lay down. And as a husband, you're really tired. Maybe you've been going on a momentum of not getting much sleep, but your wife is emotionally struggling. And she opens up about some emotional struggles that she's facing. And you weren't expecting it. You didn't anticipate it. And you're very tired. And what you're thinking is, I really need to go to sleep. I've got to wake up early. What do you do? Do you get harsh? Are you embittered about it? What about when your wife wants quality time or meaningful conversation and you don't know how to give that? Again, maybe you just want to relax, turn your brain off, but your wife really needs conversation. And when you try to talk, you don't know what to say. You know, conversation is really difficult, especially when you're around someone so much. It can be hard. You know, what do we talk about sometimes? What do you do? What about when there's tension and you're trying to help? But as you're trying to help, you're making it worse. You're trying to say things that are helpful. You're trying to be comforting, but it's actually making the situation more tense and you're making your wife more upset. What do you do? Do you get angry? Do you blow up? Do you let your frustration out? I have many times. And again, we have to train ourselves to realize that's not the way. And we can't let the fact that we struggle with this mean we lower the standard. We really need to repent, be presently minded, and realize that's just not the way. That's never the way. You know, Jesus didn't get angry at the cross and say, you got to understand, I'm so tired. I'm tired, guys. You know, he didn't have people mocking him and say, do you realize how bad I feel right now? You know, like, give me a break just for a minute. Can you imagine if Jesus would have responded that way? Jesus never leaned on tiredness, not feeling good, needing a break. You know, he never brought that up. And again, that doesn't mean that we as husbands magically become able to be the same way. It means we have to elevate our standard and strive towards that and really correct ourselves seriously when we realize that we're moving away from that and really try to correct ourselves sooner. And I think what this means is I really need to mature in how I exercise hope practically, right? I need to have a deeper sense of hope and patience when working through tension. It has really helped Eva and I. And again, I'm not saying this like we have some like perfect marriage. That's really not what I'm saying. But it's helped us grow in facing problems and in repenting of sinful things that I tend to do in tension. When I realize that God has a better way, you know, God's way is sometimes waiting through conflict and having the hope that God's going to fix things. Because if two people love each other, God's going to make sure things get resolved in the healthiest way. So what that means is hope, real practical hope in marriage, means I don't have to give in to anger to resolve a problem. I don't need to become impatient. I don't need to say something out of frustration and anger. And I think it's really helpful when you realize that healing and resolution can more effectively come when you wait through that tension without letting yourself blow up. You know, getting angry feels good. It feels like relief. The reason why it's so tempting is it's comforting. It's like you have this pressure boiling up and, it would really feel good just to let it out and unleash it a little bit. That's sensuality. You know, we get angry because it feels good to get angry. It makes sense to get angry. But the cross isn't about what feels good or makes sense, especially when things are tense. Don't give up on communication just because it doesn't solve things quickly. Keep talking. You know, we have to keep talking, keep communicating, and trust that God is able to help things resolve, even when it seems like things are getting worse for a little bit. That doesn't mean that things won't get better eventually. You know, I don't have to be mean, harsh, or bitter towards my wife at any point in tension for there to be resolution. And in fact, when I do become angry or cruel or harsh, that only makes the problem worse and makes it harder to heal and means there's more pieces that have to be picked up in the end, right? So finally, last couple things. When we've sinned, and I'm saying that when we blow up on our wives, when we are harsh or angry, that's sinful. That's not Christ-like, and I think it's more convicting to realize it's not just a mistake. We have sinned when we've done that, and we have fallen short of what God tells us. So we need to repent. And I think with that, we need to be reflective when we've sinned and try to dig deep into the roots of the problem. Why did I become impatient? Work to resolve that in your heart. Look back, dig deep, and don't just move on, right? And strive to do better the next time. And then lastly, prayer is critical when facing conflict. The best thing a husband can do in conflict is start praying and talk to God and call on God for help. So look at chapter 4, verse 2. I think this applies to husbands, and especially when you're facing conflict. Husbands need to be devoted to prayer, keeping alert, presently minded, with an attitude of thanksgiving. You know, when we have conflict with our wives, we can be thankful. We can even thank God for the conflict. We can thank God for the ways that He is going to help us in the end. We can thank God that He provides better tools for resolution. We can thank God that He gives hope. We can pray, God, please, please help me to be careful. God, please help me to be patient. Please help me to love my wife. Please help me, Father, to control my anger. And sometimes that means praying out loud. You know, sometimes what I've had to do is stop everything and pray out loud because I'm making things worse. I don't know what to do. I don't want to make things worse. And really, only God at times is the solution, right? So God gives us the tools to work through resolution most effectively. We need to be reflective to consider the real roots of the problem when we sin, and we need to be devoted to prayer and leaders in prayer when we're facing conflict, okay? That's where we're going to end the lesson. I appreciate your patience. This ended up being a longer lesson than anticipated, talking about something that I think is meant to be fairly simple. It's just important, though, to think about practical layers that might be involved in this. So what we're going to do is say a prayer for these things, and then after the prayer, if there are any needs that need to be brought forward before the church that we can help to resolve in your relationship with God, we do reserve the time of our invitation song for that. But before that, if you'll pray with me.